We're live. Welcome back to another episode of the Photographer Mindset Podcast. I'm your co-host, Seth Macy.
And I'm your co-host, Aaron Manis.
Today we had on Anwar Abdul-Kalwi. And this was a lovely interview, wasn't it?
It was awesome. It was such a cool guy. Very well-spoken. We dug into a lot of things, especially what comes through, I think, is his love for animals and wildlife.
Yeah. First podcast, too. We love doing that. We love when we christen people with their first podcast appearance, people who are doing really cool stuff in the photography community. What should some people listen out for in this episode, in your opinion? What did you get away? What did you take away from it?
Well, I loved his attitude on just having some fun with all of it. If you look at his page, there's obviously skill there. There's some great photos of wildlife, really amazing details in the eyes we talk about. But he's okay having fun with who he is, showing off who he is. He's got a great physique. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It must be easy when you're 29. that's a nod to him complaining about getting older while I'm sitting here looking at him. It's part of his package, is part of his sort of his brand, if you will. And it brings
funnel,
in,
right?
Yeah, it brings in attention. That's how he uses it. It talks. It brings it down to his love of wildlife. Eventually, he gets there. So, I think that was that. He's very well spoken. His obviously passion shines through.
Yeah, I think that we talked a lot about funnels, how to creatively get people to your page to eventually see your photography. And there's so many ways to do that. You can be funny. You can be in great shape and highlight that. There's lots of, we talk about this on the show, like how can you get people, there's tons of people taking great photos of yours, but how can you get people to your page if that's something you care about? I think we really touched on that in this episode. So without further ado, let's get into our episode with Anwar. But first, a message from our sponsor. Today's episode is sponsored by Tamron Americas. And Aaron, you have your eye on a lens that you want.
I so do. It is no secret that especially for our Alaska trip, I would love to be able to try out the 35 to 150.
Yeah.
That right? Yeah. F2 to 2.8 from 35 to 150.
And I think it's F2 up to, I think, around 100 millimeter, which is pretty
insane.
Incredible. Yeah.
Insane. And
when I was at the Sedona Summit for Tamron creators, they asked, what's everyone's favorite lens that they're using? All the Tamron ambassadors. And everyone said the 35 to 150. And I was like, oh, I don't have that one. So I'm gonna have to add that to my arsenal. I got the 28 to 75, the 50 to 400, which is really cool. I don't know if I told you the 50 to 400, between 50 and 70, it sort of acts as a macro. So I was doing a lot of filming icicles this past winter, among some other things. And then the 150 to 500 millimeter for Sony mirrorless bodies. So if you're looking for greatly priced lenses, I think the value to performance is, you're not going to get beat that with a Tamron lens. Consider Tamron lens. They perform really well. I've been liking them. And you can visit their website, www.tamronamericas.com, or you can head to your nearest photo retailer to check out some of their lenses. They have sales that happen frequently. They'll probably have one for Mother's Day. We'll have more information on that when that comes out. But thanks for sponsoring this episode. Now let's get into today's episode. So, man, you have a degree in zoology. What's that? Like, I don't know anyone who has a degree in that. And you spent some time working in zoos as an educator and a zookeeper. Is that correct?
So I've always had a passion and love for wildlife. So ever since I was a kid, I grew up watching like Nat Geo, Animal Planet, Steve Irwin, the usual. And I knew from the get-go, I was like, I want to be a zoologist. And I think people get it mixed up a little bit. So zoology is more so like the study of like animals and their habitat in the wild. And for people who want zookeeping, that's more zoo science. So I was never really into zoo science. I didn't want to be an animal keeper. I wanted to be someone who went out into the rainforest and like studied animals in the trees and stuff like that. So I went to school for zoology in Doylestown, PA at Del Valle University. Got my bachelor's there. And basically after graduation, I got a part-time position working at the Philadelphia Zoo, learned how to do some public speaking, learned how to educate. At the same time, I was balancing a job right now at the Academy of Natural Sciences. So I was kind of doing two part-time jobs. The zoo is more so for like public education. So how to like talk to the public, how to navigate, just get better at talking. And the Academy was more so for my animal handling. So I'm actually in a room now full of different animals that I work with. So like snakes, spiders, stuff like that. I did that for quite some time. And then just so recently, you know, I got a full-time position. So I'm actually the manager of my department. So.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that.
That's really awesome. So you're clearly somebody who cares about wild animals and conservation. This is a bit of a touchy subject, but I wanted to ask you this right off the bat.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do my best not to shy away from it, despite how polarized some people may be on this subject. But in your opinion, what role do zoos play in wildlife conservation? Mm. You know, some people are of the mind that they're cruel and animals shouldn't be in cages. Others have the opinion that they're a great method to expose people to the natural world on a first person basis. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure some people may have those two spectrums coincide in a blend of emotions. What do you think? Just right off the bat with a kind of hot topic.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to start with a little story. So,
yeah, sure.
During my, I did some traveling recently. I recently got back from Abruzzo, Italy, did some wildlife photography there. And we had a chance to actually meet with one of the people who work in like a conservation, like animal park, basically.
Okay.
And the whole talk was about like animals and education and how we can preserve the natural environment and stop poachers. And they brought up the topic of zoos. And everyone in my group from around the world, we had someone from like Russia, someone from Belgium, people from all over the world for this workshop that I joined. And they were like, yeah, we hate zoos, or like, you know, zoos are bad, this and that. And someone who has a zoo background, I was kind of just sitting there like, you know, do I, you know, engage in this conversation, or just like, you know, I was like, you know, there's a time and a place for everything. So I just let it just, you know, I let it go. But I get it all the time. Like I get it. I think it definitely depends on the zoo. It's really hard, but zoos do actually play a huge role in conservation. But I can't tell you the many times during my zoo years I would hear, you know, I wish that tiger was out in the wild, or that polar bear should be out in the wild. I'm like, yes, in a perfect world, I want all these animals to be out and not behind, you know, a glass or behind, you know, metal bars. But we don't live in a perfect world, unfortunately.
Right.
You know, you go out to these different countries and unfortunately, you know, poaching is a real thing. Deforestation is a real thing. Pollution is a real thing. So I think people kind of see these animals behind, you know, glass, and they get really emotional, and it's, you know, it's valid, it's fair, but they don't really see the full picture of a picture of what's actually happening out in the wild. Like these animals are living their best life here behind the scenes. And there's actually a lot of research behind the scenes you don't see for conservation, like research, different breeding, stuff like that, bringing populations back from almost extinction. So there's a lot that people don't really see, and they kind of just judge it based off of their, you know, emotions. But they were to do research or go out and like, look, like a lot of these animals are having a really rough time out in the wild.
Right. Yeah. Is there a way to, for the public to cue in on which zoos to support and whatnot? I know that's a difficult question, but are there signs?
Yeah. It's for the most part, I can only speak for the zoos that I've worked with. So here we call like AZA affiliated zoos. So a lot of zoos like bigger, I guess zoos that have a lot of like licensing and policies behind them. It gets kind of touchy when I guess you go to other parts of the world, because the word zoo is loosely used, and their, I guess, view of a zoo is like animals behind a cage or, you know, a glass, and it's more for entertainment. Where I think here, more so in the States, also, like I said, my experience, it's more so from an education perspective and conservation perspective. I think zoos have definitely moved away from that circus-like vibe in the States, and they're more so focusing on conservation and education. But I know in certain parts of the world, they are still kind of having that like, oh, look, elephant in a thing. Let's point and look at it. Or like tiger photo op session, you know. So I think it depends on the zoo. And I think that's where it gets really, really, really messy. It's also a bit linked to, I'm sure you've seen them all over Instagram, but the pay to pet services as well. And it's like probably the biggest battle I've kind of had, where I had people reach out and they're like, yeah, I saw this guy, you know, posing with tigers, or I saw this guy holding monkeys and stuff like that. Is that what you do at your job? And I'm like, no, like that's not actually real education. That's not real conservation. Like you go to actual like rehab places for animals, and they're not playing with baby tigers. They're not like wrestling with monkeys. That's not, you know, like they have no idea that people pay money to hang out with like tigers and like chimps and stuff. And then they get old. And then what happens to these animals behind the scenes? Like we've all seen Tiger King.
Yeah, we have.
People, it's really hard to like, and that's issue is that that's exciting. And unfortunately, excitement brings in a lot of money and it brings in a lot of people. And when you show the reality of the world, it may not be as glamorous, as exciting. People are like, eh, that's kind of boring. I like the more shock value aspect of, you know, this world versus, you know, reality, I guess. So
right. Right. So a couple questions too.
Yeah.
When you mentioned that you did some courses on public speaking, or they trained you on how to be a better speaker. You're clearly very well spoken.
Oh, thank you.
What were you trained in? How did, I know for myself, I'm very interested in becoming a better speaker daily. And I mean, mm-hmm. I have the privilege of working on that skill weekly with these kinds of episodes, knowing that people are going to listen and trying your best to properly articulate thoughts and questions. Mm-hmm. What was kind of helpful in making you a better speaker and allowing you to properly communicate what you're trying to say, especially to people that you're trying to educate?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. Yeah. So I, believe it or not, I grew up pretty shy. Like I, even now, like I'm a lot more, I'm still introverted at heart, but mm-hmm. I grew up pretty shy. I wouldn't really talk too much. And I actually, during my high school years, I had a really bad speech impediment. I have a stutter. I still have it now to this day. So I kind of got bullied for that a lot of my time during my high school year, where I really couldn't enunciate a lot of words, or I will stumble. And, you know, I got picked on a lot for it. So I wouldn't really talk. And of course, being in this field, you kind of have to be able to educate and kind of be able to open your mouth. So I was like, I'm going to kind of fight past that. So during my time at the Philadelphia Zoo, a lot of it was just, you know, being out, being comfortable. A lot of it's confidence as well. I find that if you really know what you're talking about, it kind of makes the conversation flow. I know a lot about animals. That's like my thing. If you put me in a room and say, hey, talk about dinosaurs or talk about fossils, I'm like, look, and we are a dinosaur museum where we have fossils as well. And I'm like, I know my limits, but if you put me in a room and you say, hey, talk about a ball python or talk about, you know, photography, I can talk. So I think number one is just being confident in what you're talking about. I'm still working on public speaking every day. Like my issue is that I still have a stutter and, I talk pretty fast when I get really excited about things. So it's, I have to mentally tell myself, wait a minute, like I got to slow down, relax. You know, I know you're super excited about this, but, and I can kind of tell if I'm like doing public speaking things on stage, the people may like look at me and I'm like, oh, I'm talking pretty fast. I mean, kind of like, you know, so I think it's catching yourself, realizing where mm-hmm. you're at, taking a breath, pacing yourself, and just kind of just,
right,
you know, going through it. And when it comes to education as well, my personality, I get really excited about a lot of things. And people have told me that my charisma and my love and passion for these things rubs off on people. And many guests have told me that. I've been stopped in the middle of the street saying, hey, you taught my kid about owls that one day. And I'm like, I have no idea who you are. I don't remember you, but like, I really appreciate that. And they kind of remember the fact that like if you're really charismatic and really passionate and truthful about something, it shows. You can't really fake it. You know, people may try, but people may put on like an act or a front. This is like generally who I am, because I actually do care about what I'm talking about. And when I get excited about it, people see it and they're like, wow, this guy really does care about this cockroach. Mm. This guy really does care about this tarantula. And it kind of like, you know, it's contagious, and your kids get involved. And we're in a public space where majority of our audiences are younger people, it's challenging. Like I had a conversation with some of my team before, the kids' attention span is dropping. It's getting really, really, really hard to keep people invested. Like with TikTok, like it got to the point, I'm sure you've seen it, where like TikTok videos now have two videos playing on top of each other. Like TikTok, you haven't seen that?
I do not have TikTok on my phone. I don't know if people know this, because I would not be able to help myself. Mm. And no offense, people who love TikTok, I just know myself and my brain would turn to mush.
I agree. I kind of stay far away from it as possible. We go on there, there's like, you know, the video playing, and there's like another video of like a car doing flips. It's just to keep people focused on what's happening. So in the world of education, it's getting really hard to keep kids invested, because their attention span is, apparently someone said like a research study, it's like 7 seconds. Like they just don't.
Less than a goldfish.
Yeah, it's getting really, really, and I think a lot is due to, of course, social media, but also like the pandemic. Like we call them COVID kids, and we have a huge, there's a huge difference between the kids that we taught before the pandemic and after. Like the kids prior were already, you know, not really focused, but now spending most of their life behind a laptop or doing Zoom calls 24/7, their attention span, their connection to like human activity, it's rough. So yeah. We're trying to find new ways every day to like interact and like, you know, make things exciting and special, but it's getting harder and harder every day.
Anwar, I'm in a school. I'm a school counselor for middle school kids. So, yes, the COVID age, I really think, I mean, this social media in terms of the kids going through now and how much they're dependent on it and dependent on checking their phone and the notifications. I just held a kid's phone for a field trip. I was there for 4 hours. It was nonstop buzzing in my pocket.
Oh my God.
With just nonstop. And it was just very telling of like, God, like this is the pull, like everything's pulling at them every minute. And I mean, not to be dramatic, but I honestly think phones and social media is the new like hardcore drug. Like,
yeah. No,
it'll take a good percent of you guys are down, really down. Maybe some of you can handle it and withstand or use it in moderation, but there's going to be a big handful of you that just get taken down by it and can't get past that social interaction, how to deal with patience, how to deal with waiting, perseverance, working at anything, putting in time versus that instant gratification or just using the phone to get all those things that you need or feel like you need. It's crazy for sure.
Well, Aaron, you're a dad.
Mm-hmm.
Are you worried for your son? Like what's the, I don't want to go too far into this topic because we have tons of things to get to with Anwar, but I mean, how does this play out? I mean, what's your strategy with your son?
I think wait as long as you possibly can. There's this fear within parents. My kid needs a phone in middle school. Like they will say that I need to be able to contact my kid at all times. What if there's a school shooting, God forbid, something like that. I just feel like it's a fear-based thing. Everyone has a cell phone. Everyone has a phone. And if there is a tragedy in the school, you're probably not dialing up phone calls at the moment. You were trying to survive. Like you'll figure it out eventually. But there's this feel like I need to be tethered at all times. It's attachment. That's part of it. So these phones get out much earlier than they used to. There's a peer pressure to it. My best friend got a smartphone. Why can't I? And the parents fall into that sort of thing. It happens all the time. I mean, when I was a kid, it was Nintendo, which was majorly innocent compared to what there is today. But like, that was the thing. Like, oh, those kids got Mario. Why can't I? And eventually my parents cave, whatever it may be. Actually, my aunt and uncle caved. It wasn't my parents. And they were pissed about it. But nonetheless, I got Mario. I think waiting and understanding, I think it's such a new, I'm going to call it a drug. It's such a new drug that the research isn't really out, that it's conclusive that mental health has tanked since 2012, like absolutely tanked. There's all this research that has brought out that the younger you are, the more serious insecurities, just struggles in terms of life, mental health, mental illness, those sorts of things. It is all connected and you see it on a day-to-day basis. I've worked for 16 years in a school and there's a massive difference between the kids that back 16 years ago and their use with social media was very minimal compared to now. Kids have grown up. They see things on TikTok. Oh, it's hit your teacher in the ass day. Let everyone do that. That's what's trending. Destroy something in the bathroom. I'm not even kidding with like, these are the things that kids see and then go do, let alone the provocative like music, content, drug use, sexual innuendos, like all that stuff that kids just can see versus, you know, not too long ago, it was far and few between where you would like see stuff like that on TV or whatever it may be, or on the internet, like looking things up. Now it's just in your face all the time.
Right.
So I just feel like, let alone screen time, let alone using that time not to be practicing a skill, an art, a music, a sport, whatever it is, it's just a colossal time suck. And I think that really will show and rear its ugly head in 10 to 15 years when these 12 to 13 year olds are mid 20s and trying to hold down any sort of job that requires social interaction, that requires disappointment, that requires perseverance, that requires a little bit of patience. So I just think it's like, it's this ticking time bomb where, you know, and maybe I'm being an old boomer and things are all just going to change that way.
We need boomer sound effect. Boomer.
But I okay, just, boomer. I just feel there's standards to being a human that this is chipping away at. I'll put that a bow on it there.
Bow on that. What's your relationship with social media, Anwar, for yourself? Like, how do you find yourself getting sucked into it? Do you pull yourself out? Because I mean, it plays an important. Well, this is up for debate. Most people say it plays an important role as a photographer. Social media. Others say no, but the majority say yes. I mean, what's your relationship with your phone?
Oh man, I've gotten way better. Like okay. It's very important, I would say. Like without Instagram, I'm not going to sit here and lie. Like without Instagram, I wouldn't have a lot of the success that I have now. So I owe it to Insta that for my success for the most part. But I detach myself. I'm really good with that. I don't like really being on my phone too much. I try to like be outdoors. I try to just put my phone away and go to the gym. Like I'm a really active person, so I don't really like being on my phone too much. And I'll find myself like if I go to like the bathroom or something, I'm like looking at TikTok. I'm like, wait. Like 20 minutes is gone. Like, what am I doing? Like, so I'll catch myself. It's easy. Like, it's like you said, it's like a drug. Like, you don't realize that you're sitting there, you're just like watching a video, and the algorithm is so, it's so nasty. It's so good. It knows what you like. You know, you're scrolling, you like cat videos. Here's another one. The next thing you know, it's an hour has passed. I'm like, wow, I did nothing with my time but watch. So I'm really cautious. I'll like dock. I'm like, all right, we'll do like 5 minutes. All right, TikTok, we're done. Because I know if I don't stop, time flies. And I know as an adult, I can have that self-control. Like you said, not to go back to this topic, but kids don't have that self-control. So they're going to be sitting there just swiping and making videos and swiping. So I'm really good at pacing myself. And for Instagram, I just use it as a tool to just reach out to other photographers like myself, just see what's trending, see other ways I can kind of fight the algorithm and grow and all that stuff. It's a double-edged sword. I love Instagram, but I also hate it. I'm sure you know with the whole issue of just like the reels, and it's you know the whole thing, but it gets very frustrating trying to, you know, I think someone said it best, really. You spend all this time and money and effort on your gear, you learn the skill set, you go out into the field for hours and hours, you get an amazing shot of this animal you're excited about, it, and you post it and you get like 2 likes, you know. I'm sure everyone can kind of relate to that frustration. And it's like, people may say, well, likes don't matter. I'm like, but they do. Like, it's one of those things where you kind of want that gratification of your hard work. You want people to see the effort you put in. We all, you know, you don't have to lie. Like, it's okay to admit that we want that kind of satisfaction, like, and people seeing our work and saying, that's a good job, good photo. And that's it, you know.
Right.
I'm not saying I want money. I'm not saying I want, but like that simple, hey, this is a good picture. Keep up the good work. That's all I need. That's all I want. And if I have to do all these skits and videos and all these hoops and file and post at this time and use this hashtag, like all these hoops and ladders, I'm like, all this just for an app that's about pictures? Like, why are you guys making it so hard for something that shouldn't be this difficult, you know? So I'm very frustrated with, you know, Insta, it's a whole thing. But it is what it is. I feel like just ranting about it doesn't really do much. And no. I kind of had that take. At first, I was just like, you know, why are we doing reels? I hate this. And then I'm like, you know what? Me complaining about it's not going to ever change. So adapt or die. And right. I adapt. Yeah. And that's how I blew up. I started making reels. And I was just like, I'm really good at self-control. But yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what we frequently try to remind and train people on this show is, of course, we want not 2 likes, right?
Like,
I mean, 200 likes to say good job. You know, this is a great photo. Is definitely, you know, it feels good. But I think what we really try to do on this show as well, though, is to train people, and this is so hard to do, but to find reward in the doing, right? Like, find reward in I posted 300 photos this year, you know, and let the quality take care of itself. Like, you're going to get better in that time frame. You're going to learn. And maybe those numbers are a secondary benefit that also feel good, right? I want to go back a bit when you were saying, you know a lot about wild animals. But for example, you didn't know when a kid asks you about fossils or dinosaurs. What's your response when you don't know something? I think a lot of us can have the tendency when we're asked something we don't know, we feel like, oh God, I got to give an answer. These people think I'm really credible and that they're looking up to me to know what I'm talking about, even though I don't necessarily know what I'm talking about in this nuanced topic. Mm-hmm. So there's an urge to give something as opposed to, you know what? I don't know. I mean, what's your response when you absolutely don't know?
You nailed it. That's exactly that. So as a manager, I tell my team, and there's no shame in just not knowing something. Whenever I do my shows on stage and I'm answering the questions and someone gets me with a question that I don't know, I'm actually more happy. I'm like, you got me. I'm like, hey, like I'm stumped. I'm like, hey, I don't know the answer to this. So we can review it after the show. Like we can we'll Google it together, but I don't know the answer. And I admit that, like, you know, I'm upfront, I'm honest about it, I'm not going to lie. And people tend to actually like that when you're upfront and you're honest, because it kind of shows that you're real, you're genuine, and you don't have this ego that, like, you have to be this center of knowledge and stuff. And even kids would be like, why are you so smart? I'm like, look, kid, like, there is so many, like, I'm terrible at math. It's like, I'll tell everyone that. I can't measure, I can't do a lot of things when it comes to numbers, I hate them. So, you know, I am open to, you know, my weaknesses and my flaws and stuff like that. So I tell everyone, and also as an education perspective, we don't want to get into that flow of just lying or just saying things for the sake of saying. That's very dangerous. We have enough of that in the world. If you don't know something, just be upfront and say, I don't know at this time. Like, you got me. It's a great question. I have no idea. And I tell all my team that, like, look, no shame, be honest. Like you said, I don't know.
It's funny you say that, because for me personally, when I ask a question to someone I look up to, and I think I've said this on the show before, when somebody says, you know what, I don't know, I trust that person so much more. It's the people who tend to know everything despite what their apparent scope of knowledge is, who like somehow always know everything, kind of gives me red flags. Mm-hmm. But when someone says, hey, I have no idea, and I look up to that person, their credibility goes up double.
Crazy.
Just from a personal, just from my own personal experience.
Yep. 100%.
Yeah. They go, hey, that's a good question. Let's look it up.
Right.
Yeah. And that shows confidence and just sort of like you're okay with who you are too. Yeah, not a need to prove something.
Well, Anwar said ego, right?
That was ego. Yeah. Like, you don't know everything and that's okay.
I think people struggle with that, right? Like, people struggle with being a beginner and not knowing stuff, and it makes them feel inconfident and it lowers their confidence. But I mean, what is it? The Dunning-Kruger effect? You think you know everything at first, and then you get humbled, and then you feel like you know absolutely nothing. And then it's a slow curve throughout the remainder of time as you actually increase your knowledge base.
Yeah.
I love that little graph. Yeah. For anyone curious, look that up. The Dunning-Kruger effect. Mm-hmm. I want to rewind a bit too, when you're talking about how you're an excitable person and how that, you know, does wonders for you. Has that ever worked against you?
I would say my biggest issue that I do have as an educator, and it kind of reflects on that, is people kind of see that as I'm young, or they don't really take me as serious. I think people kind of connect excitement with, you know, being a kid. I get mistaken for, you know, being like a volunteer or a college kid. Like, I graduated college years ago. I know I look young.
That's sad to hear, and if I'm being honest.
I mean, it goes both ways, because sometimes, like, I feel as good, I guess, looking youthful or whatever. But like, it does, when I'm in certain rooms of people who are, I guess, who look older than me, they perceive my knowledge as not being that great because of how I look. And that's has always been an obstacle that to this day I'm still fighting, where people see me as excitement. I'm excited. Like, oh, he's a kid. I guess they don't really perceive adults as joyful and playful. They're more like
sad. It's so sad.
Just like, but I'm sure you can relate to that. But I'm sure it's interesting. You know, they relate that excitement to, okay, he's a kid. He's not, you know. So I'm like, no, like, why can't I make learning fun? Like, that's probably the biggest obstacle that I do have. It's just people just don't take me as seriously, unfortunately.
You know
but
what?
It is what it is. But
that says so much about the state of someone's internal, like their mind. Like, oh, you're too excited and enthusiastic. You must be inexperienced or young.
Yeah.
Or, that's brutal. Why are we not psyched about the things we should be?
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah.
I
mean,
I guess that says a lot about the state of the majority of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. or the stereotype of intelligence, like the stuffy professor.
Exactly.
That's older and is going to be very serious and listen to me.
Yep. Yep.
You know, versus the excited, excitable kid.
I always say that my shows on stage are very like a stand-up routine. So when I first started training, the first thing I learned was that never try to be someone that you're not. I had plenty mentors that I would watch on stage with different animals. And one person was very stoic. One person was a bit way too jokey. One person had everyone has their own style of education. And the main thing I took was like, you know, I can take notes on like proper ways of like, you know, as a blueprint, as an outline, but most of it has to come from the individual. Like I can't be someone I can't be something that I'm not. I'm not really the stoic, you know, stern, snobby professor person, you know. Mm-hmm. I fit with what works for me. So I guess I have a youthful look. I'm pretty funny. So I try to make learning. I'm very sarcastic. It's probably my thing. I'm very sarcastic. Mm-hmm. So I make learning about animals fun and sarcastic. So I'll like, you know, tell animal jokes on stage. And I learned that if you can get to the kid, because the parents are just there for the kids for the most part. If your kids are having fun, the parents are having fun. The minute the kids are like, mom, dad, I want to leave, the parents got to go. So if I can make my 30-minute presentation about snake shedding or birds fun and entertaining, and the kids are like having a fun time, the parents are like, perfect. Like this is, they're all having fun. And that's kind of what I learned. So.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, and that concept is so applicable to photography too. Who are you serving? Mm-hmm. Right. Having that intent. I think even to just go back with when we were talking about social media, I think it's helpful to have an intent before you open the app. If there's some way you can cue yourself to have an intent of what you plan to do or what your ultimate, I don't know, your reasons for being on an app are, I think that can help minimize some damage of time lost or wasted.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Right? Because I guess I was thinking as you told the thing we've all done before, we go to the bathroom and we've been on TikTok or Instagram for 20 minutes and we go, holy shit. Like,
yeah.
That's 20 minutes back. My question is catch, and this is, feel free to weigh in both of you. I mean, is the damage already done that you've wasted the 20 minutes, or have you sort of succeeded in catching yourself? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Is that too philosophical for today's day and age with pooping and on your phone?
I love philosophy, but
it depends. It depends how valuable that 20 minutes is to you. You know, if I'm doing a reset diet and there's no carbs allowed, and I keep catching myself after I eat a loaf of bread, you know, like, oh, I ate the loaf of bread, better not do that next time. The whole reset diet is not going to work for me. Like it's just not gonna play out the way I want it to, no matter if I catch myself or not. Mm. So depending on what, but if I allow myself, in this example, a loaf of bread a day. I'm just saying, because that's the example I used. If I allow that.
Holy, sponsored by insulin.
If I allow that, then I get to that point. If I take a little bit more, I catch, like, then it's okay. But if I'm really trying to do something, if I'm trying to not be on social media and I keep blasting away 20 minutes and catching myself, big deal. Like, congrats, you caught yourself after you messed the whole thing up, you know? So it's one of those things. Now, if you're going down from your screen time being 4 hours a day and you're catching yourself at 20, bravo.
Yep.
You know, and you're headed in the right direction. I think it's exercising that practice or that muscle, whatever the muscle is, the brain, the habit, the behavior, the addiction, the obsessive, the compulsive to check the app, even when you don't have service. Like, I know I don't have service. I'm on a plane and I'm going to check the app. No, that's a compulsion, right? So to be able to work some of those things out, I think then you're on the right track. But if you're just doing what you normally do, but you catch yourself after you do it,
right?
That you might be tricking yourself.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Makes sense.
Well, I mean,
go ahead, Anwar.
Yeah. Really fast. Yeah. When I was in Africa, I was super excited about this trip. It was like almost half a month. And it was really stupid. I just had my phone out during a rainstorm and it actually broke probably like 5 days within this trip. So I'm out here in the middle of, you know, a whole new country and without a phone. And at first, it was the most stressful thing in my life because I can't check the time. I can't check anything. I don't have a translator. Like, I felt, you know, naked without it. And I was it was a weird thing. I'm like, this piece, this small thing is such a huge importance in my life. And luckily throughout the trip, you know, it kind of eased out and I had the most enjoyable time because I was able to actually just take in my surroundings. Like instead of just checking on the clock and Instagram and Facebook or whatever, I was just out enjoying myself in nature. And of course, you know, I would go home and check, make sure everything was okay. On the computer, I'll update myself and like my family and I'm okay. But just being out in the moment and not just having my phone, it felt really good after a while. So that initial shock was very stressful. Like a drug, we keep saying this example, like it felt like I was like, I need it, where's my phone, I'm craving it. And then I was like, you know, it feels good not really having to check my text or check. I just, you know, being in the moment felt amazing.
Yeah. I think now I travel up to the Adirondacks a bunch and there's basically no service up there. So it really flips. Like now where I live, it's, I'd say 90% service. And occasionally you have like one bar or no bars and it doesn't work. When you go up there, it flips where it's like 90%, you're not going to have service. And there's these little pockets where you might. And in it immediately switches for me as I've been up there a bunch where it's like, oh, I'm in the no service zone. Like you can let it go. You just like, it's not going to work. And you let it go. You accept the fate of, I can't really check my phone. And then it has a nice healthy balance where it's like, oh, I know this little town where you go get coffee, you can get Wi-Fi for a minute and you do your priority stuff. Cause you're there for 10 minutes before you go back out. Like I want to text my families and friends and just say I'm good. Maybe check the weather for tomorrow. Anything on Instagram I need to deal with? No, not really. It's garbage. All right, then let's move on. And you go back into the wild and kind of know that there's that safety net, that 10% somewhere in the town, but most of the time you're just gone. And you do transform after a couple of days of like, oh, this is kind of nice. Mm-hmm. Not being so reliant on it, not wasting time necessarily, just scrolling or looking for things or just the habit of just pick up the apps, go through this app, that app, put it down. Mm-hmm. 30 seconds later, same thing. Yep. Like that. We've all done that where it's like, oh my God, I just did that. Why am I doing that again? I just think it's really nice. I told Seth, I went on a camping van trip for a week last year and I was in this van for the entire week. There's no mirrors. In a very similar analogy where you don't have to check your appearance ever. Mm. You don't see a reflection. There's another piece of you that layers and like pulls away. And one of the biggest pullaways from this whole trip was like, I didn't even realize it till the end. I was like, huh. It was just being in nature and seeing what I see and being with my son, traveling. Where are we going to next? There was no like, how do I look today? Like, do I need to shave? Any of that stuff, any of that sort of ego, like self-centered, like, how do I look sort of thing completely went away. And I probably look like absolute crap, like walking into restaurants. It was nice to allow that to just disappear slowly without like the pressure of like, oh, I don't look good today. Oh, I didn't sleep well. Or like any of that stuff. It just went and you could just be. It really was like a nice realization.
I'm laughing because I had the exact same experience in Africa because we were on an island. So we had to like actually bathe in a lake, in a waterfall, mm-hmm. like no service. And we spent like maybe 2 weeks there. And on my way back at the airport, I looked in the mirror, I was like complete shit. Like I had like this caveman, scraggly beard. My hair was, I was like, wow. But you're right. When you're in that moment, you're like, I'm out here just living life. Yeah. And it almost brings up another point where like, I'm still to this day kind of struggling, but it's making content as well. There's that balance of, I want to just be existing now. But I'm focused on, oh, this would be a cool video for Instagram. Should I do like, and I'm sure you've all probably experienced that, like, you know, the balance of being in the moment for your photography, but also in the back of your mind of, oh, should I record this for content? Is this profitable? I kind of hate it, but it's like, it's a must. And I always feel conflicted with that aspect of just this world that we live in where we constantly need to pump out photography and videos and keep it because we stop, we fall off and the reach it's just keeping up with the algorithm and I wonder if you guys ever go through anything like that.
I mean definitely. I think that it's two different, I try to separate it in two different things. am I going, my first love is photography. I do like video. I do like, if I have a funny idea or some sort of reel that I think like, oh, this is a good idea. To me, it's content creation in a different way. And I think I try to separate the two just for my own brain, because doing them both out at the same time, both are going to be shitty. You know, if I'm really trying to get a great photo of a bald eagle, let's say, for example, that's what I've been looking at lately. I really need to be there 100%. Like, I'm ready for this photo. I want to get this takeoff photo. I don't want to be videoing like a funny thing while the moment happens and then I miss it. So to be able to separate it, the thing that I do like nicely about like content creation and creating video is you can kind of separate it. And you can attach a photo from the day before to a video from this current day and kind of put a story together versus it all has to be in the same exact moment and very truthful. There's some leniency in terms of your storytelling of like, this is a reenactment of what I was like yesterday, but this is the photo from a week ago, you know, and you can kind of cultivate these pieces of content and show off photos from a really serious photo session. So being able to separate it for me is really important. I've tried to go out and do both things and nothing comes out the way I want it. Seth, thoughts?
Yeah, I've very much simplified my approach. If I'm having fun, I'm doing it. So if I'm feeling like editing a video and it's fun, it's enjoyable, time's flying, I'm right where I'm supposed to be. Yeah. And if I don't want to be out taking a picture, good. If it's not fun that day, I'm not doing it. It's just, mm-hmm. That's kind of now my new criteria. Am I having fun? Mm-hmm. If I'm not having fun, I'm not doing it.
I like that.
You know, yeah, especially great. And that's more so like for the things that I, you know, I'm passionate about. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk about the cold showers and all that stuff. That's not fun. What I'm talking about here is things that like are my passion, right? Mm-hmm. I don't want, we talk a lot on the show about not having your passion be taken away from you because it becomes too much of a chore or it's keeping up with the Joneses.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, do I want 100,000 followers? Yeah. Am I going to sacrifice my happiness to do it? No. Mm-hmm. I mean, that may sound like an excuse to some, but I just don't, for me, I don't see the fair trade value in that.
Mm-hmm.
If that means putting out a reel a week because I want to, and I'm like excited to put something out that I filmed, mm-hmm. despite one reel a week not being sufficient to grow, so be it. Like, I'm okay with that trade-off.
Yeah.
I like that. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's sort of where I'm at. But speaking of, you know, we were talking about being healthy. You're obviously an in-shape guy.
I'm trying.
If people think I'm lying, subscribe on YouTube and watch this episode. Yeah. But we do talk a lot about fitness and treating our bodies nicely. We talk about running a lot, staying healthy. We actually had a listener write us and ask us to talk more about this subject, which perhaps we'll do more in depth in another episode. But to somewhat satisfy that listener's request to hear more about this topic, how have you found staying in good shape, exercising, taking care of yourself has helped you stay consistent with your photography? Right. We talk, Aaron and I talk about how, you know, look good, feel good, play good, more energy. Yeah. It does directly translate to better performance with photography, taking care of yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, how has it helped you stay motivated to accomplish tasks? How has it helped your overall day-to-day performance? This particular listener mentioned that they accredit a lot of their commitment to fitness to being committed to their photography journey as well. And it's helped them power through creative lows. So I'm curious to hear your relationship, if there is one.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I even like photography aside, like I just love being in shape or just being healthy in general. I just think there's nothing better than just waking up and it just transpires. Like if you're eating good, you're taking care of yourself, you kind of start your day off already on a good foot, you know, like you wake up, you have energy, your body works. And so I watch so many people on Instagram and they're like old, not old, but like, you know, they're a lot older than me. And they're in good shape. And I'm like, I want to be like that. Like I want to be in my older years and I want to still be able to move, crouch down, pick up, you know, I want to be able to be mobile with my kids, you know, eventually. Yeah. So I look at that for the future, but also like I enjoy photography. So I want to be able to walk around the jungles at 70, you know, I want to be able to do all these activities. Mm-hmm. If I take care of myself and my body now, I don't smoke, I don't drink, I don't do any drugs, anything like that. And growing up, it was really hard because, you know, popular in high school, like drinking and stuff like that was so, if you didn't drink, you're a weirdo. And that's kind of how right. It was when I was in high school. And it kind of, you know, luckily I had friends that were supportive, but a lot of people were like, oh, you don't drink. That's kind of, what do you like? That's weird, you know?
Yeah, are you okay? Like, do you have a problem?
It's still like that.
Yeah, it's still, yeah. I recently went to like an event and someone was like, you're not drinking, man? I'm like, no. And he's like, oh man, you can't have fun. And I was like, you know, whatever. So it's one of those things where I'm like, live your life. That's fine. But I just really care about my body. And I'm noticing that as I'm getting older, I'm sounding like I'm like an old man. I'm only 29. I'm only 29.
Oh, we're the same age.
Yeah. But I realize as I'm getting older, as I'm getting older, my body isn't recovering like it used to. And I'm like, my metabolism is slowing down a little bit. You know, I got injured actually recently. Like I messed up my shoulder. I actually bruised my sternum doing some stuff working out. And I'm like, I'm not bouncing back like I used to. So I got to really kind of take care of my body. And it just overall makes the outside world really fun and enjoyable. Yeah. Being able to hike, climb areas, get crouched down low, you know, for photography, like we have to be mobile, carrying gear. It's just all these things kind of help relate back to my fitness. Yeah. When I was in Italy, we had to hike up this mountain and I'm like, I'm in pretty good shape. I was struggling. I was like exhausted. I was sweating. I was like, this is like, I thought I knew, you know, I got my body, but I guess there were still limitations and stuff like that. So I take fitness very, very, very seriously in that aspect. And for Instagram, I mean, it's just fun, like attracting new audiences. Like I know I have like a meme with like thirst traps and stuff like that, like the shirtless thing. It is fun.
This is where you just go like this.
It's, you know, like I know it's like cringy or whatever, but it's like the way I see it and the way it helps is that I want to kind of, it's part of my personality. Like before I did photography, I was really into fitness on my Instagram. Like I was way back then. And overall, like, you know, I enjoy it. And if I can target new audiences, not everyone may be into animals from the get-go, but they see somebody they find attractive, whatever, they click on this guy's page and it's like, oh cool, I'll follow him for that. And there's actually a photographer that I know who's in a weird boat where he started off doing a lot of landscape stuff. He's a good looking dude. And he got really popular on TikTok and his huge following of the people who were just in his comments saying, you know, you're so hot, you're in shape. And he's in a weird spot because he wants to post more of his photography, but no one cares about that. They just want to see him. And I was like, I don't want to go that far. Like
I have that same problem.
Where, I do. Yeah.
Just see the comments. He's like, ladies, please, enough.
Yeah.
Boomer.
I actually had someone DM me and was like, you know, I appreciate you, like, you like, it's your page, but like, I appreciate it if you just like, you know, did more animal stuff and show less of you. And I was like, excuse you, like, this is my account. Like, if you don't like what I'm posting here, you can leave, you know? So it's one of those things. And it's hard, you know, sometimes find that balance. But I, like you said before, like, I'm having fun and it's generally my personality. I want to kind of show a lot more of myself and my work. And like I said, fitness is a huge part and I'm having fun. I enjoy it. This is my account. This is my page. I'm going to do what I want.
What's a double-edged sword about fitness is that if you're a fantastic classical pianist or if you put your, I'm going to do a concerto, Chopin concerto. I'm doing this whole classical piece. It's incredibly hard. No one's like, show off. Right? Like that, that's the thing you're passionate about. That's what you want to show. And we all do, whether you're a great golfer, photographer, videographer, you do hair and makeup, like we're all showing, if you're on there, usually things that you're passionate about and care about, and maybe that you're talented at or have worked at, whatever it may be. Right. And fitness has this weird sort of like, oh, you're into yourself. Like, well, yeah, you know what? I am. I'm proud of being healthy. Yeah. I'm proud of doing this. And like, I'm showing the hard work. It's the same as showing the hard work of piano. And if people are like, it's more a reflection on them, I think, in terms of like, I don't need to see that. Or they're making me feel like whatever it is, whatever it may be. Yeah. It's just an interesting dichotomy between like some other skill that you're showing off versus I'm showing off how much I've worked at whatever it may be, physique, health, fitness, the ability to feel comfortable taking my shirt off, whatever it is. And, and good for you.
Exact point.
Yeah. So, I mean, and by talking to you, by hearing you speak, it's not all about that. You're obviously educated. No, you're talking about a whole bunch of other things. It's a, it's Instagram. It's a game. It, you know, it, if photos were the only thing that did it, you probably would be shooting, just posting photos of animals.
I tell everyone, I was like, I enjoy myself more so like, you know, behind the camera than in front of it. Like I can do it, but I have way more fun taking pictures of animals than of myself. It gets boring. Like if I'm being real, like being in front of the camera posing, it's not that fun. It's not that exciting. It's kind of like, cool, it's me. Like I'm shirtless, whatever. But like, it does get like heartbreaking when like I post a picture of like a bird or an owl, or not an owl. I never got an owl. I'm upset about that, but a bird that I love, an eagle, and it gets like, you know, a few whatever, and I post a shirtless picture and everyone's like, I'm like, this took no effort. Like I worked so
that's not
hard.
True.
But it did take a lot of effort.
That's true. That's it did take effort. That's that Aaron's point, right? Like you worked really hard for that.
That is true. I guess I don't see You're right. It took effort. More shirtless pictures then. Okay.
More shirtless pictures. I think Aaron's comparison was like,
I know.
Was like people, you work so hard to be a good photographer. You work so hard, so much effort. Yeah. And then you get this awesome image and people are like, hey, sweet. Like that's awesome. And then you work so hard in the gym through injuries, you know, years and years of packing on muscle, cutting fat. And then you post that and people are like, ugh,
show off,
inflated ego, that's show true. Off. Yeah. It's like, what's the difference?
That's true. That's very true.
What's the difference? Yeah. If you can like creatively integrate it into your, what's the difference between that and becoming really, really, really funny, working on your comedy routine, and then incorporating your comedy into your photography? No one's going to say that.
Exactly.
So it's very interesting.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And if you were, if you were 300 pounds and lost 100 pounds, like everyone applauds you on the way up.
Yep.
When you have the, when you have a top physique, or you have, you know, you're really at the top, there's no room but to just try to tear you down.
Yeah.
That's social media. That's social media. You start to get a following. You start to get a bunch of people. You start to get more comments. You're going to get the ones that are like,
oh, trust
me, I know everything. You know, let me post my opinion about his physique. You know, look like you had a little extra carbs this week. Like just
a loaf of bread,
entire loaf of bread. Meanwhile, these two 29-year-olds are complaining about like injuries and waking up in the morning and my body's not the way it used to. Freaking wait. I'm sitting over here like I tore my hamstring putting my shoes on today.
Oh my God.
I'm out for four to six months because of it. Take it easy over there, 29-year-olds.
Yeah, I'm hurt too right now.
To be even more practical, I've been taking up swimming. Because I've always had a fear of water, and I'm doing really well now. Because I want to actually get into marine photography. That's my new like guilty pleasure on Instagram. Just going through people's accounts, like whale sharks and sea turtles. Just like just being underwater. I'm like, this is a different world, and I want to explore it. You know. So I've been doing that, and I didn't know how draining swimming can be. Like endurance wise, I'm like, oh my Lord, like this, it's a lot.
It's a lot.
So it's crazy how like. People who do these things, like they're in shape, like their endurance, their cardio, like they're really, and Instagram has really, I guess, show that. Like you see these pictures, you see the videos, but you don't really see the behind the scenes of like the person training to be able to deep dive and do these things. It's not just going underwater. It's a lot of work. And I'm like, props to them. So
yeah, great point.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess sort of what I'm hearing too is like pictures of yourself looking in great shape are sort of a funnel to your photography.
Yep.
Right. Which is, I think, very smart. So, you know, the other thing I wanted to ask was obviously in a lot of those photos, you have the very ginormous, massive prime lens, which in itself is I would say it's a hook, right? Didn't we talk about this with Slater, Aaron?
Yep. Yeah, we did.
Utilizing the beautiful lens to not only capture great photos, but to also hook people in who aren't wildlife photographers who are like, whoa.
Yeah.
What is that? So, I mean, do you find that the massive Canon prime lens not only helps capture photos, but also acts as a funnel or a prop or engagement?
I can't tell you how many times I'm sure you experienced it when you just go out and someone's like, that's a big lens.
Right.
And you're just like, how do I respond to this? Because it's such a weird link.
Thank you. Just wink.
Thank you.
What they say. It
happens every single time that I'm out. Yeah. And it's definitely a conversation starter, and people want to learn about what you're doing. Right. It's almost like a real estate agent having to have a really nice car. I've learned that people who do real estate typically dress nice. They have a nice car for the appearance of looking a certain way to kind of convince people, hey, this guy knows what he's talking about. And it's almost like this too. We're like, have you looked the part of, you know, you're out there with this giant camera looking up into trees. People are like, oh, do you work for like Nat Geo? Do you work for like this? I'm like, no, you know, but you just kind of explain your situation and people tend to take you a bit more seriously. And they want to see your Instagram or they want to see your website. So it's definitely helped me get a lot of people on the platform, also just out in public and people coming up to me and wanting to learn about my account. So yesterday I was out photographing Osprey and they were just flying above shooting with my camera. And like this girl walked by and she was like, did you get a picture of the Osprey? And I was like, oh yeah. And it was flying. It was really cool. And she was like, you have an Instagram? And I was like, yeah, I have an Instagram here. It's just a good networking tool. And at times it feels, you know, it can feel a bit, how do I phrase it? Like you're kind of clutching on this thing. Like you're kind of just like, you know, showy, like, hey, look at me. I have this, a prop, for example. But, you know, it's, I don't really see it like that. People kind of see it. It will say like you're using it as a prop, like, you know, you get, or, you know, I don't really care. But I've gotten that a few times where people have accused me of not really being a real photographer because they just think that I'm just like, you know, out in some park or in my backyard. Or if I can still be in my backyard. There's plenty of birds back there. But yeah. People don't really, they see me as, you know, oh, his mom bought it for him. He's just faking. He's not really a real photographer. And those are real things I've heard over time. So it works both ways. People like it. Some people are like, oh, you're just, oh, your parents bought you a nice lens. I'm like, no, I this is my hard earned, you know, I don't reply. But people feel jealous and they want to just come at you and just say, you're just showing off, or I can take better pictures of my cell phone. Imagine wasting, you know, this much money. And we can, I'm like, all right, live your, someone who came from a cell phone photography. I'm like, live your life, man. Like you can.
Yeah. Right. So, Samsung S3. That's what they always say. My Samsung S3 could take this.
I have that as a question written down. If you feel the accessibility of smartphones and how good their cameras are becoming has influenced perceptions of photographers for better or worse. And what I mean by this is if more and more people have access to better and better cameras that fit in their pockets, does it make what photographers are doing who are using SLRs or mirrorless cameras less valued or appreciated in the eyes of non-photographers? And does that matter?
Yeah, that's a really hard question. It's a really good question because I'm conflicted. Yes and no. So yes, from the people who kind of just want to hate. So there are a lot of people who just, like I said, will see you out in the field using your lens or whatever you're doing. And they feel that jealousy of like, oh, I don't have that thing. So I'm going to just crap on it. So I'm going to comment, hey, imagine buying this big lens, a waste of time. I can do the same thing on my cell phone. And you just let them just, you know, they already have it in their mind. They should know that there's a reason why photographers buy these giant investments for their photography. They know, but they want to troll and that's it. I don't really feed that. I look at it as it's a great tool for people to get into photography. As someone who's came from the world of like using a cell phone, it's accessible. And cameras now are so good. It's a great gateway for people who want to get started into this world. I don't want to gatekeep and be like, no, you can't take pictures on yourself. Like, no, like I want more and more people to go out. And I've actually, I think I'm doing a workshop pretty soon where I'm working with high schoolers and we're going to be exploring a local park. They're going to have their cell phones out. And we're going to do some like birding on our phones using like a birding app to like identify the pictures. And, you know, so I think it's a great way for people to kind of, you know, bridge that gap because people see photography as, you know, there's a higher, you know, you guys are super professional. I can never live in that world. I have my lowly cell phone. I'm like, no, like we can connect. Like we don't, there shouldn't be the separation. You know, I think that these are tools. They're very good. Why not use them? So for the people who just want to hate, I don't really care about them. I think it's actually a good tool for people to get into the world of photography. And the cameras now, I've seen some stuff. People can do some. There's a lot of accounts on Instagram. There are people doing really, really, really cool stuff just with their cell phone. I'm like, that's actually pretty impressive. That composition, lighting, all this. I'm like, you guys know what you're doing. And it only goes up from there. Once they realize, wait, my phone can only do this much. All right, I want to get a DSLR. I want to get this. I want to get that. I want to get that. And it kind of just adds on and adds on. So,
right. Right. Yeah. Makes total sense. You guys doing good for camera batteries quickly though?
Yeah, I'm good.
Good? Aaron?
Yeah.
That did not sound confident. You talked so much about confidence today.
I think so.
Anyways, continue on your add-on, Aaron.
I was just going to say, it's a tool, but there's got to be skills behind it. And it reminds me, and where I often talk about golf, but Tiger Woods changed golf in terms of his physique and working out. He changed it for everyone going forward, and he was a dominant force. Mm-hmm. And that'd be equivalent to one person having a 500 prime lens out of the entire field of photographers, mm-hmm. where it's like, wow, that's a different ball game.
Yep.
Now, almost everyone has a personal trainer, workout routine, lifting weights, strength trainer, flexible. Like, they're all doing some sort of version of what Tiger did. And now the field is very much leveled out. There's a lot more competition week to week from tournament to tournament. But then occasionally someone rises above that because of sheer talent. In our case, would be composition or creativity or something different. So all the cream rises. Sports keep getting better and better and better. Art gets more interesting, better and better and better, you can arguably say. I just think that's the competition. Like, look around. You're not the only one that's taking a photo of an osprey. Mm-hmm. 1 million people took a photo of an osprey today. How does yours compare? Whereas, yep. 20 years ago, you might have been the only person taking a photo of an osprey on that day. Mm-hmm. So it's just become, things are going to get better and better and better all around. From the low-end photographers are going to be better than what they were 20 years ago. And the high-end photographers are going to create these amazing and capture these amazing moments in wildlife or whatever your genre is. And the bar just keeps on raising. Mm-hmm. What doesn't change is the work and the... again, perseverance, going out day after day, waiting for 4 hours every single day, 5 hours every single day, learning an area day after day after day. If you go out once a week and do it for an hour trying to catch a picture of an osprey, you're probably not going to get that one that's going to beat the other million that were taken today. Yep. It's just the way it is.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah. You mentioned a really good point too. I was actually watching a video on the same subject about people, they were in this photo competition and, this person was kind of upset and complained to one of the judges and just said, this person that won, I don't understand. Like, it was the same exact bird. Why did this person win over mine? Like, I use this expensive equipment. I don't understand how they're different. And the judge was like, well, he said, okay, I'll look at your picture again. And he was like, yeah, they're the same exact animal. But the one that won was able to convey a story, an emotion, something different. And I always preach this to my followers who reach out to me. They're like, hey, how do I get better at photography? I'm like, the world of photography is so, like I said, so saturated, so much competition. If I Google a picture of an osprey, you'll get millions of pictures. The trick is, how can you make your work stand out? How can you give it emotion? How can you, be different amongst everyone else? And that's how you find people, like I said, that keep raising that bar of, mm-hmm. it's not just an osprey, it's an osprey upside down grabbing a fish or something. It's an osprey doing this. It's yawning. It's doing something. It's conveying more of a story than just a picture of a bird, sitting there. And if that's what you want, that's fine. But if you want to grow and get better and better and capture, more moments like that, you have to really push yourself and challenge. Like you said, like going out for an hour, you may get lucky and get something cool. Mm-hmm. But usually those really amazing moments happen where you're out there waiting and waiting and waiting. And it's just, you can sit there and have a full session with your subject and get those behaviors of mating or, feeding or whatever it's doing, instead of just, oh, it flew by, I got a picture, and that's it. So I definitely think that you said a good point of just raising that bar and just conveying more of yourself and storytelling in your work, and just taking a picture and said, this is a bird, like it,
Yeah, I think it's no matter what it is, it comes down to a little bit of time on site, we all do wildlife. So the example being, like, if you go out for an hour, you might get lucky, you might get a decent shot. You, out of your 100, 200 photos you take, there's going to be one that you're like, oh, that's pretty good. But if you do that for 6 days in a row with the same bird pair that's hunting, fishing, bringing food back to the nest, like whatever it is, now you have 6 days times 200, you have 1200 photos to look at. There's gonna be one that's remarkable compared to that. Now you do that over a month and you pick the one best photo, it's not even gonna compare to that 1 hour first time. So it does come down to like, how much do you really love the thing and how much are you really putting in the time to take it to the highest, highest level, you know?
100%.
Well said.
Mic drop.
Well said.
Yep. That was good.
Unsolicited feedback on photos and reels. If it isn't asked for, is it rude or is it helpful?
What do you mean?
So like if someone just leaves a comment offering their feedback on a photo or a reel that you posted and you didn't ask for it, do you take that as rude or is it helpful for you?
It depends on how it's phrased. I'm open to criticism. I that's in the line of work that I am. Like when I'm working, people come up to me and said, "Hey, you did this talk. I think you can do this better." I have the mindset of you can always be better. You can always change. No one's perfect. So I have that with my photography as well. If I see a comment and someone's just like, "That's a cool picture," I would have decreased the highlights. I'm like, "Oh, cool. I appreciate that." Like I'll actually respond back. But if you're saying, "Oh, this photo is shit," or "You're terrible." Like if you come across and you're already just being rude and arrogant for the sake of it, I'm not going to take you seriously. And of course, if I go on your profile and you have nothing there, or you have like, you know, no pictures, I'm like, "Oh, you're a troll. Like, you're just purposely doing it." So it definitely is a balance. I don't think anyone is above criticism, and I will happily take it. So if people will comment and say, "Hey, good job," or "Hey, maybe decrease the saturation of this," or "This is a bit much," or "I'm not really feeling this edit." That's, I appreciate the love. I appreciate the support. I appreciate the engagement of you willing to sit there and actually, you know, say something about it and interact with the post. So I really appreciate that. And it's getting perspectives. I took a picture of a red deer and I did an edit and blew up on Instagram. And people were like, you know, I get that a lot. We're like, "It's terrible. This is a really bad edit." I like editing a lot. I kind of like playing around with my edits and stuff. So at times it can get a bit crazy. But I did the edit again recently for an editing course I was doing. And it was a lot more of a natural edit. And I was like, I kind of actually like this style a bit different than my previous one. So I think people kind of change. Like as you grow as a photographer, you know, looking back at my work, I'm like, we're always growing. We're always changing. We're always trying out different stuff and techniques. That's just part of it. Maybe an edit I did a couple months ago, looking back, I'm like, "Hey, maybe I won't ever do that again." You know, but that's just part of being a photographer, just learning and growing and changing. So,
right. Right. I was particularly drawn to the eyes on the animals that you edit.
Yeah.
Is there some sauce there? Can you divulge some ingredients? Yeah, probably
my most controversial thing that I've been doing with my photography. I learned that technique from another wildlife photographer that I watch. Forgot her name, Danny. I forgot her last name, but she's from Sweden. I love her work, and I've noticed that people in their photography, her work is always beautiful. But I'm like, there's something that's missing from my work and your work. What is it? I'm like, it's the eyes. And when you learn it, like the eyes are like the gateways, they say, of course, to the soul, like the gateway. When we first look at an image, it's like you're always directed towards that, the eyes of a subject. And when I learned like how simple it is, just like, you know, highlight, mask the eyes, brighten them, increase the clarity, I'm obsessed. So almost every picture, I kind of just like, you know, brighten it up, making it a bit more attractive. And just, I turn my pictures almost into art in a sense. I look at photography as a way of art and also how I want to express myself. And I'm very clear. I say that if I'm using my work for scientific research, as I do a lot of stuff here at my job involving like research, if they need a picture of a bird, I'm going to give them the most natural, raw image of that animal. I'm not going to obviously spruce it up. I'm going to give it, but like for social media, I'll spruce it up. I'll put my little taste and my little style on it. I'll mix it up and have fun with it. But I'm really clear. I'm like, if I'm using this for a photo competition, I'll be upfront honest. I probably can't use most of my stuff because it's way too flashy. It's not as natural. And I'm upfront honest about that. If I'm using it for research, I'm not going to use it. But for my social media, for my own personal benefit, I'll have fun with my work.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
Well said. Well said. If you could offer one piece of advice to yourself, your former photographer self, just one, what would it be?
When you were much younger at like 22.
Oh my God. I really wish I started sooner, honestly.
It doesn't even need to be photography, piece of photography. It could be life advice, anything.
Oh, don't be afraid. Take more risk. I've always had this notion in my mind that traveling wasn't going to be for me. For the longest time, I kind of lived a life of being told no. When I was going to my first high school, I had my high school interview with the principal and he was like, you know, "What do you want to be when you grow up?" And he was with his assistants. And I was like, "I want to be a zoologist." And I was super happy. My parents were there. And the principal and his assistants all started to laugh. Like they were cracking up. And I just sat there and I was like, you know, what's so funny? I didn't like tell a joke. And the principal looked at me and he was like, zoology, like a zoologist. That's a really hard field to get into. It's a lot of work and, you know, time. Instead, you have long legs. Play basketball for my school instead. So that's what he told me when I was in high school. And I was broken. I was devastated. And at that young age, I didn't really have an adult tell me something like that. I had my parents always encouraging me, so you can do it, you can do it. So my first encounter with someone in the real world, in a professional setting, was someone saying, your dream is not real. I'm sorry, it's not for you. Luckily, that wasn't the case. And I went to another school and then, you know, my life is, I'm doing it now, which is amazing. But even then, I still in the back of my mind, I was like, okay, I'm doing it, but there's still limitations. Like I could never, I'm on Instagram, like people are in Africa, people are in Australia. I'm like, I'm a kid from Philadelphia. I'm never going to be able to like do these things. And my first trip, I have a good friend. He was like, dude, we should go to Wyoming. And I was like, dude, that's so far away. And he was like, but is Yellowstone's there? We can do like cool, like exploring out there, do some photography done. And I was like, sure, whatever, man. We'll go to Wyoming. I was like, we're not going to ever go to Wyoming. And we did it. And it was my first time flying international. And that was like, I'm sorry, national. My first time on an airplane. Mm-hmm. And that was like maybe like 3 years ago. And I had the time of my life. And from then, I'm next thing you know, I'm in Africa. And being in Africa, I like, when I first got the reveal that I was able to go through my work, I like cried because I couldn't really comprehend. I was like, my entire life, I didn't think that this world was going to be for me. I always saw it through my small screen and I kind of live vicariously through other people, other photographers. And I was like, but I'm actually in the rainforest in Africa photographing monkeys. I was like, this is a reality that I'm living in. And none of this would have happened if I didn't really take that leap. And it's really scary. I feel for people who reach out to me who are working 9-to-5 jobs, who want to make photography their thing. It's hard. It's not easy for everyone. And they always say, how do you do it? How do you do it? Because how do you take that leap? Because I have responsibilities. How do you make money? And it's hard answering that question. Everyone has a different life. Everyone has different circumstances. But I say, if you can, you know, try to just figure out your life situation, if you can try to just take that leap, you know, of course with safety nets there as well, it'll be worth it. Because if you're not truly happy with the life that you're living and you feel as though you can always do more, you can do better, why not take that risk, you know? So I would say take more risks, take more opportunity. There's a huge world out there and there's so much. I'm still learning every single day about the world that I'm in, and you will regret it if you don't take that chance. So
very well said. Ladies and gentlemen, Anwar, thanks for joining us today, man.
Thank you so great much combo. For having me. Thank you.
Anwar Kalwee. We said that right, yeah?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Thank you. All right. Well, until next time, appreciate your time today, man. That was an awesome interview. Aaron, pleasure talking with you as always.
Always. And, thank you.
We'll do it again sometime in the future.
100%. Thank you so much for having me.
Awesome. Until next time.
All right, take it easy.